Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat, it's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
This is the Adulting with ADHD podcast, self-empowerment for people with ADHD. Very excited to have with me today, Heather and Sarah Taylor, and they host the Brains podcast.
Brains.
Spooky. I'll let them tell you more about themselves. Super interesting backgrounds and super interesting topic we're talking about today. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'll jump in.
And, yeah, please do.
Introduce myself. I'm Sarah Taylor of the Taylor Sisters. I am a film and television editor based in Canada, and I joined my sister to co-host the podcast Brains with three A's, where we dive into mental illness and disabilities and how we see it on screen.
Yes. We always have a special guest that comes in that has lived experience of something and then talk about how they wish they could be represented on screen. It's just so fun because we get to learn so much every time we have a conversation. I'm a writer and a director. I was a former journalist and ad exec for my sins. Not the journalism part, the ad part. And I think I take that mindset into the work that I do of the interviewing people. So it's so interesting to be able to do that as part of this podcast, and to just bring, hopefully, to listeners just the understanding that all of these things are very nuanced and everyone's experience is their own experience and they're all different. Mm-hmm. And that we have to see. So just like one representation of, I'll just say, X is not enough on film and television. We have to have many, many, many representations because there's so many different experiences.
Wonderful. Preach. So to get started, let's talk about how you guys got into this space.
Well, podcasting is something I've been doing for quite some time. But then Heather and I constantly talk about our brains and all the things that happen inside of them, whether it's like, hey, I learned this new trick in therapy, or I'm feeling this certain way. And we also always talked about how we would see something on film and television and be like, what the heck? Why are they doing that? What is going on? And we'd have our little rant sessions and we decided, I think it's something that we should probably maybe record. We could give it a go. And then Brains was born.
Yeah. I think we talked about, well, Sarah's like, we should do a podcast. And I was like, I don't know what we can do it about. And then when we stumbled upon that, we're like, of course, this is exactly the perfect intersection of like the work that we do, what we talk about, what we really are passionate about. As a writer, I'm always trying to put my own lived experiences on the page because I realized the reason I even went into writing was because I was deeply personal in a project that we did this collective creation. I was deeply personal, told a personal story, and people will come up to me afterwards and say, I always felt alone. I never heard anyone else had the same experience as me. And I realized that in sharing our experiences and sharing those parts of our lives that we often feel we have to hide, that actually by doing so, by hiding that, we're doing a disservice to ourselves and to a lot of other people. And so for me, it's like, how do we continue to tell these unique experiences with people who don't always get to tell the story?
Mm-hmm. I love that. In your work, what's the most important takeaway you've had on how neurodivergent people are represented on the screen?
Now, I'm going to say, like, for this conversation, I'm going to talk about neurodiversity through the lens of ADHD and autism because they're best friends in the neurodivergent world, because neurodivergency can be many, 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 many things. I think often when people say neurodiverse, they kind of mean autism, but it's not what it is. It's many things. And so I think the biggest takeaway that I have is that most of the time, neurodivergent representation is just coded. Their characters never say that they are neurodivergent or say that they have ADHD or autism or anything like that. And the reason I think so many people want to hijack characters to see representation is because when characters are coded, they're overwhelmingly more three-dimensional, complex characters. And then when you say, this is here, we're going to tell you the story about autism, it's very often more one-dimensional characters or very, we'll talk a little bit about, what we need to do better at, but that often it's like just very like to someone who is non-disabled, they'll be like, great, that's autism or that's ADHD because it's so stereotypical. Yeah. And so we're not really seeing ourselves. And I actually had someone say, everything I see that's not coded feels wrong. Mm. But then we have characters. So I'll just list a few characters because I think it's interesting. Yeah. In autism, we have people that have said they feel identification with Christina Yang on Grey's Anatomy, and she's a very complex character, or Abed in Community, or Tina in Bob's Burgers, even though they sometimes address that. We have Amelie, or even Dax in, I can't remember the name of the film. Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm. That he's coded autistic, which I just love. And then like Sheldon in The Big Bang Theory is an obvious one that people talk about a lot. In Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I read recently like Captain Holt and Amy Santiago would lean into the autism camp. And then for ADHD, you have Jake Peralta on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So impulsive, a little stereotypical ADHD, but identify with that a lot. Hank on Bluey, Dory in Finding Nemo, Hiccup in How to Train Your Dragon, and then Gene in Bob's Burgers, the youngest son. And even I've seen like GIFs of Bryan Cranston's character Hal in Malcolm in the Middle, which I love. There's one where he's like, oh, the light bulb's out, I'll go find the light bulb. And then he goes on that train that I have been on many times where you find yourself, as my husband says, and suddenly all of the pantry is on the kitchen table and you are reorganizing something that was perfectly fine. And then at the end of this like sequence, you see Hal under the sink with everything out from under the sink, trying to change like a part of the sink out because there was a clog. And I'm like, and he's like, don't you see? She's like, why is the light bulb still out? He's like, don't you see I'm getting to it? And he's like in the sink. And I'm like, oh my God. Yes, that's me. And they call him a goofy human hairball, but really he's probably a guy who has undiagnosed ADHD.
This resonates so deeply in both my relationship with my sister and my house. People in my house. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm thinking of my garage right now. So let's jump into what misrepresentation can look like. Let's back up. The examples you just gave were just examples of it existing, not necessarily misrepresentation.
No, those are just coded. None of those examples are people. Those are examples that people have cited as being like, same thing with like Wednesday from... Mm-hmm.
Wednesday.
From Wednesday. that's an easy one to remember. Saying, oh, she's autistic. But it's never said. And the idea, like, without saying who they are or, that part of themselves, which is not all of themselves, audiences don't expand their understanding of neurodiversity or that idea of what's acceptable differences, which, I mean, we should all accept all differences, but you know how it is. But we need intentional representation.
Yeah. Thank you for that clarification. So with that understood, what are some examples of misrepresentation that you guys have observed?
I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed is that if the character is cited as having, say, autism, that is the storyline. It's just about their journey of dealing with autism. And they're not three-dimensional characters. That's the only beat they have is their neurodivergence. And that doesn't serve anybody. And then again, it's always like harking back to that stereotype that we've seen maybe from some other, another show, like, oh, the person's like, oh, I heard about autism once. Here's a story about autism, right? So that's, or it's like they're become like a superpower because they have like, they're so intelligent because they have this one thing that they're hyper-focused on. So like in The Good Doctor, like there's certain characters where it's like, just because they're autistic makes them a superhero.
Yeah. I think there is often, especially the savantism in autism is really overplayed. So really they only make up, and I want to relook at the stat because I found the stat somewhere. I'm like 10% of autistic people. I think it's less than that. But then we see like The Good Doctor, The Accountant. I know. And The Accountant, people are like, wait, no one who is autistic was involved. They're like, but we interviewed people. And again, we need to be part of the storytelling. We'll talk about that later. But they're over, or like coded portrayals like A Beautiful Mind or Sherlock Holmes is a big one. Who are often white men who are there to provide mystical insights into something that no one else could crack. And that is their purpose, right? Thankfully, like Sherlock Holmes is a little bit more three-dimensional. Like the new, I'm thinking the new one with Benedict Cumberbatch, but still he's pretty screwed up. But they're often still like the odd one out, right? Yeah. So I think a lot of times it's like they're the odd one out. They're the only character who's neurodiverse. And if we actually look at our lives, I'm looking at you, Sarah, and I myself, I mean, lots of my friends have ADHD and autism and family members, many other people in my life. So I'm like, and mental health disabilities and like the whole gambit. So I'm like, wait a minute, why is there only one? So often they're that odd one out. It's very othering. And then this idea that often it's showing the effect people with neurodiversity have on other people. So we don't see it from their perspective. We see it from how is this person impacting all these other characters, even when they're the main character? I think that, and overemphasizing those traits, like I said before about like that idea that they seem autistic or they seem like they have ADHD to non-disabled people, but it's just like this laundry list of who we are instead of taking into account that these are spectrum disorders. ADHD, I saw it's like often the symptoms provide comic relief. They are they really like bug other characters and they're never properly addressed. So that's to me, and it's often again told through that perspective of like primarily white, primarily male perspective.
Today's episode is sponsored by Joy Organics. Their range of premium THC-free CBD products are designed with the highest quality in mind, perfect for those looking to enhance their self-care routine. Visit adultingwithadhd.com/joy to get started and save 20% off your first purchase.
And if you don't mind, I'm going to give some stats because I love stats.
Heather loves stats. Stats are the best.
Stats, math. Okay. So
math. The best.
So there's a really good study that was done by the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative. So they do stuff about inclusion. They've been, I think, for the last 8 years have included disability in their conversation. You should really look at their studies. They're amazing. They said only 1.9% of all speaking characters in films in 2022 were shown with a disability. So this is broadly all disabilities, which is wild. 1.9% of films in 2022.
And again, state the stat of how many people.
25%. 25% that is known. That is like, because people don't disclose necessarily. So 25% of people who have known disabilities, that's our population. So such a vast difference. And there's no meaningful difference in this percentage of and these are speaking characters, so sometimes they don't get to speak because often people with disabilities are used as set pieces. Like, oh, I'll just put that guy in a wheelchair over there. Look, I did it, disability. And I'm like, oh my God, so wrong. But that stat isn't different over the over 800 films in 8-year time span of the study. Most characters have a physical disability. So if we're talking about something like neurodiversity, I think they put it under the idea of a cognitive disability, which also addresses things like depression, dementia, PTSD, like those all sit under there. Mm-hmm. So that's 17.3% of people with disability. So mostly, most characters have a physical disability. So mobility, missing limbs. We all need representation across all of them, of course, because characters could be shown with more than one disability. Those percentages don't equal 100% because people often have multiple disabilities.
Yeah.
But yeah, 54 of the top 100 movies failed to feature at least one speaking character with a disability. And then 76 movies were missing female identified characters with a disability. And then only one of the 800 movies included in the like overtime analysis reached, you know, proportional representation of characters with disabilities. And actually they say here 27% of the US population has disabilities. And that was in 2021, one film. And so it's just wild that it's also like, you know, we said heavily male and is 70% are male. 3/4 of the characters' disabilities were white. And then only one character with a disability in 2022 was LGBTQ. And out of 800 films examined, only 10 characters shown with disability were queer. And none of the characters were transgender. So, yeah. And only a mere 15 characters with a disability in 2022 were shown as parents. And we know that we love people and are in relationships and have children because we do. We are three-dimensional characters who have lives. And we are aunts. We are moms. We're dads. We're... or we're not, but we're all like, I have lots of plants, but no children. And so it's like but we don't see those representations. And I think, or like, especially leading characters that are leading the story, and we get to see the story from their perspective, and they're not being used again as a character who will, they're not being used to basically say, show how good someone else's life is. Like, we know from conversations we had in the past that often disability storylines are either fix, institutionalize, or death. Isn't everyone else sad that that person died? And can't we be inspired by them? And we're like, how about we get to be three-dimensional characters?
Yes. So we need to do better, clearly, by this study. Yeah.
Anyways, that's the study. That's the information that's
coming
out.
My brain splintered in so many directions hearing you read those stats, and I have so many questions. But what I will do is I'll put the link to the study in the show notes.
Fantastic.
Because I'm sure the listeners are also dying to look at this study.
Yeah, like, and it's like a study of everything, and they look at behind the camera, not as much for disability, which I'm curious about, but I think it's because it's probably so minimal. But they do talk about behind the camera representation, and actually that box office numbers aren't impacted by, like, a lot of times you're like, oh, but we need this, you know, white male famous lead and at the top of the show so that we can make lots of money. And actually, statistically, I looked at like box office returns. It didn't actually do that. That's not true. It's just very much baked into this mentality of the people making decisions that, well, these are the people we have to give the most money to. And then you look at something like, you know, what hit, what's like breaking records and blown out of the water is the Barbie movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a woman with ADHD.
Yeah.
Greta Gerwig was the director and co-writer.
Amazing.
And why aren't we giving more? And if you look at, like, well, why did that hit more? It's like, because they actually gave them money and they actually gave them marketing.
Major marketing.
So very surprising, major. Right? Like, if you tell people about something, they will go watch it.
Yes. Huh. Oh, wow. Yeah. This is a really good conversation.
I have a lot to say about this.
Heather,
yeah.
This is, again, why we do this podcast. There's lots of things to say.
Oh, that is so gross. So,
yes, it is. That best so line gross. Of the day. That is so gross.
So gross. Yes. Agreed.
So of these very few who get it right, what are some examples of where it's been done right? If you could even think of
them. No, there are.
Yeah, there are some. Can I say one, and then Heather, you can go on your spiel.
Sure, sure. I'm ready. For anyone who knows, doesn't know me, which is probably a lot of you, yeah. I have a 5-page document with all the things I want to say. Sarah knows I have a lot to say.
Yes, she has a lot to say. I just want to point out one that I recently saw, and actually Heather pointed me to the show. Oh my gosh, now I'm blanking on the show. Not Dead Yet.
Yes, Not Dead Yet.
Yes, Not Dead Yet. I was like, wait, is that the name? And her roommate in the show is played by Steve Glassman, who is...
Rich Glassman.
Who's Steve Glassman? Anyway, Rich. Anyway, he is autistic in... He is an autistic human, and he plays...
Right. Rick
it's not
Glassman.
Rick. I'm like, it's not Rich either.
No, like, I know. I was like...
Steve, Rick. Clearly, he is also a white man. Rick Glassman plays... the roommate of the main character. Yes. And there's a moment when he is upset about how she's organizing things. And then she says, what are you, Oshbergers or something? And then he was like, yes. And then leaves. And I was kind of like, at first, like, what? And then he comes back later in the episode and says, by the way, I am autistic. We don't call it Ashbergers anymore. This is how I need things to function so that I am in a good space and I need my space to be like this. And she was like, okay, cool. Thanks for letting me know. And then, you know, they got along better. And then throughout the series or that season, there was moments where he was like super masking with this girlfriend he had and not being his true self. And she was like, what are you like? You need to be like who you are truly is the best and don't mm-hmm. hide those parts of you. And he was able to like just let himself be himself. And it was a beautiful moment. So I like that one a lot.
Yeah. I think what's also cool is that he is an environmental lawyer. He yes. went to Stanford, I think. Like he is like successful.
Yeah, totally.
And this idea, but also obsessed with like he has like all these collectibles. Like that's his like special interest. He loves video games. Like
yeah.
there's other things. So again, I think a complex character, but also played by someone with autism. I think the first show that ended up being shown on mainstream television that actually had an autistic actor playing an autistic character, that main character was Kayla Cromer in Everything's Going to Be Okay. It was created by Australian comedian Josh Thomas. And then through the writing of it, Josh was like, oh, wait, I'm autistic too. So now it's like created by someone who's like, this has helped me really identify myself and who I am. Rick Glassman was also in a great show mm-hmm. called As We See It, which mm-hmm. has three autistic characters, varying different needs, different family situations. They show, you know, the idea of like having an older brother acting as parent, trying to deal with his sister who just wants to have sex. And he just doesn't understand that. She's like, but I'm a human and I'm a, mm-hmm. and I'm a woman and I want to have sex. And like, yeah. let me figure this out. Let's find the right way to do this. I think also what's cool, well, I think a lot of times we see really good representation more and more in children's television and for young teens, because I feel like there's this acceptability in that space to, like, I had a friend of mine's like, I feel like I can be really open about who I am if I want to write for kids TV, but not if I want to write for mainstream TV, which should not be the case. It should be like, no, we embrace these conversations everywhere. But there's a really great show created by Matt Huether and Courtney Jane Walker called Home Sweet Rome. The main character, Lucy, has ADHD and anxiety. We know those two things are often like comorbidities of each other, or anxiety is a comorbidity of ADHD. I love that they have that. Also one that I didn't even flag, but it's so true, is Julie and Julia.
Mm-hmm.
Julie has ADHD and she says it out loud, but I just never flagged it. And then I'm like, of course you are so obsessed with doing her. I mean, I've done that. I did Daily Ukulele for 220 days. And then my routine got disrupted by someone being in the house. And then I stopped doing it and never went back to it.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, oh, of course. So I think you start to like realize that they're, you start to like realize they're there, but then also there's people who let it go. Like, did you know that Betty in Riverdale in the pilot episode had ADHD and then they never mentioned it again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't. Someone else mentioned it to me and I was like, oh my God, because they show her ADHD meds.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
She's an overachiever. And
totally.
That idea.
It tracks.
Yeah, it tracks, but then they never bring it up again. So I don't know if like they drop that. But then you'll also see things like Heartbreak High has great representation played by an autistic actress playing autistic character and dealing with that. I think documentary has been really great. There's going to be a show on Broadway called,
How to Dance in Ohio.
And they had autistic actors. They had an autistic consultant because though we say we need to have creators, you also need the creators and the actors not to be the consultants. So you need to have someone there as well to help.
Oh, okay.
Be the person who can be like, hey, we need to change the environment, or hey, let's do this thing, or hey, like come ask me questions. So it doesn't become, great, we're going to hire one disabled person to come in and they're going to answer all the questions of all the disabilities. And then they will also have to write and do everything else. So they're doing double duty. So it's like having a mix of things. And then let's see, I'll give another one. There's something like Teen Wolf has a character in it who is named Styles. He's the main character's best friend and he is diagnosed with ADHD. And he also has anxiety and panic attacks. And so statistically 50% of adults with ADHD struggle with anxiety. And then there's a quote from his coach, which just makes you feel a lot of feels. So Styles, great kid, zero ability to focus, super smart, never takes advantage of his talents. And I'm like, how many people with ADHD were told could do better if they applied themselves? FYI, we're trying.
There's one other show, and of course I don't know the name of it. I think it's a Disney show, and it's with this little guy and his dog, and he's like in junior high and he has anxiety and he's coming back to go back to school. He was being homeschooled because his anxiety was really crippling for him, and then he comes back to school with his support dog. And
oh,
so
I like that.
It's really sweet and the dog's freaking adorable. Yeah. And so I watched that with my kid and that was like a good thing to watch.
That's why,
like, to like explain what it could be like, what anxiety could be like.
It's important to have that in kids television, but again, I'm like, it's so important to have it in adult television.
Oh, for sure.
Why. Like, I'm really curious, like Percy Jackson is coming out, the new, like they have a sci-fi series coming out. But Percy Jackson has ADHD and dyslexia, which often also go together a lot. And I didn't realize, I guess I just didn't, again, I didn't really watch the Percy Jackson.
It was good.
I know. I love it. It's also the stuff I love. I don't know. I hadn't watched
it. Again, we watched it with our kid. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. So, but basically his dyslexia allows him to read ancient Greek. I'm like, wow, I wish that's really true. And his ADHD like helps him conquer challenges because he looks at the world differently. So I love that they did that in, it's kind of like a superpower, but he's also part God. So, I mean.
He's already got a superpower.
He's already got a superpower.
Yeah, there's already suspension of belief, so it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
totally. So, what's the key to achieving more of this good representation out there?
Getting the people to tell the stories.
Yes.
What is it?
So it's nothing about us without us.
Yeah.
And I think Jeremy Andrew Davis, he's a writer, director, and producer, and he's autistic and has ADHD. He said... he would like to change that to say nothing about us without us in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because the thing is that a lot of times what happens for any marginalized community, whether you're disabled or you're a person of color or you are queer or identify as part of the LGBTQIA+ community, that you are being put in very junior roles. And it's really hard for you, unless you can find allies in the room to support you, you end up standing up for things and having to try to communicate things and then basically be seen as a person who blocks things and says no. And a lot of people will afterwards be like, oh yeah, I really thought it was a good point, but they never supported you. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we have to change a lot of things back there, but in that bit of conversation,
yeah.
But I think let us be part of the storytelling process, but also like, let us be in charge. Mm-hmm. Let us have more representation across lots of shows. Mm-hmm. Like we said earlier, like let us be like the fun aunt and have kids and be in loving relationships and, you know, see the less romanticized aspects of neurodiversity, but also in the guise of being a wholly three-dimensional character. I think, and that we have many things that are impacting us, and we have many interests and many things that are totally as part of our lives. Disabled people are not often allowed to portray disabled characters. So over 90% of the time, they're not included, and they're not included in the creation process. So often the conversations are with people who are the parents or relations of those who are neurotypical, and not people who are neurotypical. I've had someone say to me, not meaning to be mean or undermining, but they're like, oh, but maybe they do that so because it would be too hard for someone with autism to do that job. And I went, I have ADHD. You think I'm less capable? And she's like, no, not you. And I'm like, So I think there is this misconception that if you have a disability that you are not capable. Yeah. And that's not true. It's just that everyone needs an environment that works the best for them. And so to start to take away that, like, I've started to be very vocal about being disabled, having ADHD, because when people see me, they're like, oh, but you're smart and but we like you no matter what. I'm like, yeah, it's just one part of me. Again, one part of me. And so I just have found a way to move through the world and mask in a very specific way, but it's very tiring. Mm-hmm. And so if I could like at least be a little bit more of myself, that would be very helpful. But also by standing up on stage, like I was nominated for an award and we didn't win, but I had in my speech to call out to all the writers and showrunners and producers in the room that they had to do better, because the representation in our guild itself is in the 0.6% area. Yeah. We're not, and that's the Writers Guild of Canada. We're not, and the U.S. is pretty close to the same. I think they're 1.6. Woo, like we're a little bit more. Right. And they have a really great team advocating just for disability within the guild, which is fantastic. I think David Radcliffe is in charge, is one of the top people in that group. And I'm just like, we're trying to fight from, fight is wrong. We're trying to, no fight. We're trying to fight from the inside and the outside to be like, we need to change this. And I think, you know, really advocate for the right representation. And when creating characters, you're like, you know what? I'm creating this character, but when I'm in the room, we need multiple people. You know, I want multiple people with neurodiversity. Mm-hmm. I want the character to be played by someone who's neurodiverse because they bring something new to that character and something different and nuanced. And like, hey, this is not how I would do it. Could I do it like this? Because this is more reflective of me. Yes, that's why it becomes better. This is why we get to, and centering the experience instead of it being like about the person with who is neurodiverse with autism or ADHD or whatever, get to see their lived experience and how the world affects them, not just about how they seem to affect their carers or their effect, and always having to mask and, oh, you should just smile and make eye contact. Well, what if the show said there was a character that said, hey, why don't you like just be okay with me not looking at you? Why don't you just okay that I don't smile? Why is it not okay that sometimes I'm just a little loud and excited?
Yeah.
Like it's okay.
I want to add something for like crews that work on shows and like in the edit suite. I think obviously trying to hire people that align, but educate yourself too. Like investigate this stuff. Listen to podcasts, you know, do train courses about accessibility. Just be, and so that you can be that voice in the room too, to be like, yeah, actually I like that point is important. And like you can be an ally and support the people that are around you that are working and trying to make these changes. I think it's huge.
And producers, please have diversity training as part of both for a writer's room, for your crews, like
all
have that
crew.
Because it's important, because there are people in that room that would not feel safe to disclose. They may not still feel safe to disclose, but you are making sure that everyone feels welcome.
And if you're, sorry, go ahead. I said, and if you are a person that's upper level in your department, use your voice, use that power you have to support people in your team to, you know, ask, what do you need to do the best job? Like I started doing this now in my edit rooms. What do you need? I'm not asking anybody to disclose. I just want to know what they need to do the best job and be the best at what they can do.
Yeah. And ask everyone, because again, it's not just disability. Someone may like, I need to leave at 4 because I have to go pick up my kid, or I have a regular health appointment for my mental health. like I have a regular appointment for, let's say, for therapy. Mm-hmm. It should be no different than when I say, hey, I have an appointment for immunotherapy for like my allergies. That seems to be more acceptable than I have to go to my therapist.
Yep.
I've literally sat in the, not in the lobby because it's disruptive, but on the floor of where you come in the door before you go up the stairs to the lobby, like in the dirty floor doing a call and walking through a presentation because I couldn't get that time because it's not acceptable to have time to take care of your mental health. And so I think that we need to like continue to have those advocates and continue to have that training and continue to look at like, we need to create environments that are better for the people who are working in them and like asking the question instead of forcing the person who has the disability or has the need to always be the one who has to like stand up and ask and not necessarily or say, hey, this is what I need. But instead of just saying, okay, they're like, but why? And kind of forcing someone to disclose. And I think that is where we have to look at making those changes, where we have to allow people to just create, have better environments for them to work. Just really quick, another stat. Sure. I did find the stats here that 2002 WGA West Inclusion Equity Report, disabled writers about 1% in the WGA. Mm-hmm. West for 26%, 27% of the population. WGC, as we said, Canadian population, 22% is disclosed as disabled. In the Guild, 0.6%, as I said.
Yeah.
So the Inevitable Foundation, if you are disabled and you are a creator in the creative industries, take a look at what they're doing. They really have a huge campaign right now, hire disabled writers, not just a disability consultant. They're like, so we say if in a writer's room, it's better. This is from David Radcliffe from the, he is a, like works on the committee for the WGA for disabled creators. Like he's an advocate, they have committees. And so he says, if in a writer's room, it is better to have a woman writer than a woman consultant or a black writer than a black consultant or a Latin writer than a Latin consultant. I have no idea why the disability consultancy space is so often the first or only place people look for us.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that is how we make change is let us be in the room. Let us be behind camera. Let us be on camera and listen to what we have to say.
Yeah. So final question on this topic. How do you feel like, how do you feel like, it's headed. How are you? It's a two-part question, but you know, how do you feel like it is going in the right way, and how do you feel like it's not?
Well, statistically, it's not changing.
Right. Yeah.
And in fact, sometimes getting worse. Mm-hmm. So, I think if we try to impress upon people that the audiences are thirsty for content that is about themselves. I have one of this gentleman named Sam who was in, I was in the respectability lab for entertainment professionals with disabilities. There's a wonderful comedy writer named Sam that was in the group. And he said, it's basically like we're in a desert for content and we're so thirsty that we'll drink sand. And that idea that we're just like, there's nothing for us, so we will just watch whatever we'll consume whatever we can, even if it isn't good, which is not the message. It should be like you could serve 26% of your audience by having more inclusion. And so I think if when we are looking at, again, someone said, in order for you to have authenticity, there's a big talk about authenticity. Those of you who are trying to create things to be saying audiences are looking for this authentic representation. Audiences, there's 26% of audiences that will give you money, that will buy things. There's buying power there that we are dismissing. That is, and also I'm going to say this, everyone, eventually we will all become disabled. That is an inevitability as we age. That is just a reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that we don't think about making better spaces and better worlds until we are experiencing ourselves. And so can't we just do that now?
Yeah. I'm going to leave it there. That's perfect. Hold on a second. Take a deep breath here. Yeah. Okay. So, so before we go, I want to talk about the three-part series you guys have on for Mental Health Awareness Week. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we have a three-part series that came out this week. We're recording the first week of October for Mental Illness Awareness Week. And we have one episode's about stigma with Amy Archibald Varley, who's a nurse, health equity specialist, and co-host of the Gritty Nurse podcast. She talks about stigma, where it comes from, and how it leads to discrimination. She also informs us on how to prevent and address stigma and how to be a good ally. It's a great conversation. Our second episode is about diagnosis, the journey to diagnosis. Dr. Lily Lee, a registered psychologist and the director of clinical innovation at the mental health tech company Dive-Thru, which is so cool. She discusses how to take the next steps when you need help with your mental illness or you're looking to improve your mental health. We also get advice on what to do when it's difficult to see a therapist, when you can't afford it, or there's a long wait times, which is like the reality of our systems, and the importance of having a really great support system in place, which I touch on because I had a really great support system when I was going through some hard times. So it's really, really important. And then our final episode is all about disclosure. And like we mentioned in this conversation, nobody can force you to disclose. You can choose when it's the right time to do it, when it's safe. So Steph is a psychologist, and she's also the host of Psychocinematic, which is a great podcast, and she's based out of Australia. We love her. And she currently works within the disability inclusion space in schools in Melbourne. She has her own lived mental illness experience. So she comes at it with a really unique perspective. She talks about how to approach disclosure, the concerns around discrimination about disclosure, and how to address it, and why some people incorporate their mental illness or disability into their identity after they disclose. For both Heather and myself, I feel like since we've started disclosing, and I think partly by doing this podcast and talking about it in a microphone, we have had a lot of people approach us and, you know, share their journeys and their feelings, and or encourage people have felt encouraged to go and find out, you know, maybe get a diagnosis or investigate what's happening within their brains. And so it's really I feel really fortunate to be in this space and to be able to help support people however I can, even if it's just me sharing my story, because feeling seen by hearing somebody else's journey and words and experiences, like, it really can be a light in a dark, dark time. So it's important.
Absolutely. Well, you guys, this has been such a valuable conversation, and I really appreciate you guys being on the show today and the work you guys have been doing. And before we close out, could you share with us how the listeners can keep up with you online?
Yes. So we are Brains. So that's BRAAINS. So just like zombies, they go for brains. So do we. We're really excited both. I mean,
Brains.
We don't eat them, but we do talk about them. So you can find us on all social platforms. You can find us on everywhere that you can listen to a podcast. You can go to our website, brainspodcast.com. So BRAAINS podcast.com, where you can find all the episodes that we've done so far. You can find out more about us and what we do. You can also leave us a comment, or if there's a topic that you'd like us to talk about we haven't, please do. If you are someone who, like, I have really an interesting story to tell, and I'd really like to talk about that, and I love film and TV and I want to talk about that too, let us know. Come reach out to us, because we really want to hear lots of different stories from lots of different communities. So please reach out.
Wonderful. Okay. Let me stop this recording.